A lot of things have been happening around the world that we have not commented on, and based upon what happened today and people's reaction to it, I would like to take a moment out and comment, particularly since this evening on Yada Yada Radio, we're going to return, and we may even return in the second half of our program today, to the revelations that Yahweh provided in Yeshaya, beginning with chapter 1. I think we're approaching right now the fifth or sixth verse of the first chapter. But today, actually it was last night, five Dallas police officers were shot and killed by a U.S. Army reservist. He was a black man. He said that he wanted to kill white people, particularly white police officers. And the U.S. Congress has responded by black members getting up before empty seats and crying, saying, when are we going to do something about guns in this country? So I would ask the first question. The march that took place in Dallas last night, it was in response to two gun shootings, one in Minnesota, your state, Scott, and the other one was in Louisiana. Who was holding those guns?
It's the police.
Both cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both cases, those guns were owned by the citizens of this country, and they were wielded by police officers of this country.
Right.
Can you tell me how infringing on the U.S. Constitution and constraining people's rights to bear arms would have had any effect on the police using their guns to shoot two innocent individuals?
It have none. In fact, it encouraged them to even be more reckless.
Would that parade in Dallas have taken place, which was predicated entirely on what happened in Minnesota and New Orleans in the day previous, had the police not shot those two individuals?
No.
So is the problem that individuals in America can own guns, or is the problem that our police are far too militaristic, far too vicious, far too irresponsible?
It's definitely the latter.
Cool.
The latter.
It's obvious. So why isn't anyone saying that? That the police, you know, listen, I mean, I want to tell you, I want to go back one step before we come to this conclusion. To be so stupid, to be so irrational, to be so out of touch with reality, to be so grotesquely immoral, to think that the proper response to a number of people, let's not just take those two police officers that shot the two people day before yesterday, but let's back up and think of the murderer of Tamir Rice, the young man that was playing with a Tor gun that was shot in cold blood within a second of the time that police whisked up before him.
They did a drive-by on him.
They did a drive-by
on him. On a 12-year-old boy, yes.
But the man who was choked to death for trying to put down a fight in New York City and said, I can't breathe.
Eric Garner.
The list is long. But what kind of a moron?
Over, yeah.
No, what no, kind no. of a moron? Oh, yeah, the one in Cincinnati pulled over for a taillight.
Professor or whatever
right,
she was.
Right, yeah. What kind of a moron would think that the proper response to somehow sanctioning and holding these individuals who worked in different cities accountable would be to go out and kill people who had nothing to do with the choices they had made? I mean, that's like Muslims deciding that because they did not like the fact that the U.S. intervened to push Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait rather than allowing fundamentalist Muslims to engage in jihad, that the appropriate response was flying planes into our buildings and killing people that had nothing to do with that decision.
You ask what kind of a moron would do that?
Yeah.
Probably one in the that wants to be in politics. Probably one that's already in Congress. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, obvious one that was in the U.S. Army Reserves.
What's the American attitude that always thinks that if we shoot a bunch of people up, innocent people, that they're not going to respond.
Yeah, or that the proper response to violence is violence.
Yeah,
and we all think that we had to engage in Vietnam because of the Gulf of Tonkin. Now, the Gulf of Tonkin never occurred.
But we
got to teach them a lesson.
We
thought that we had to engage in World War I because the Germans had sunk the Lusitania when, in fact, we arranged it to be sunk. We had to engage in the Spanish-American War because they sunk the Maine when they had nothing to do with sinking the Maine. Why is it that we're so prone that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, which he didn't have, therefore we need to strike him? Why is it that we think that the solution to everything, the proper response to everything, is violence?
We are that arrogant jerk that Yao keeps talking about.
When Yao said that he had to reset humanity, that he had grieved that he'd even created us, that he needed a fresh start or there was no hope, what was the offense? Was it that people weren't religious enough?
No.
Was it people were not political enough?
Or that they didn't have enough guns?
That they weren't governed properly? No, there was a single reason.
Killers.
We became killers.
Everything.
Our response to everything was to kill. That's why the flood occurred. And that's our response today. So this idiot, Mr. Micah Johnson, in Dallas, who is part of the U.S. Army Reserves, thinks that the appropriate response to those idiots in police officers in New Orleans and Minnesota that murdered those innocent individuals, that the proper response is to kill other innocent individuals? Now, I want to spend a moment, Scott, and talk about the four things that I think have caused what we're witnessing in America. And it's not just at a personal level, it's also at a national level. America's use of drones to kill without due process, without trial, internationally, as if the world were ours to decide life and death, is part of this. But so are all of the mass shootings that we're witnessing around the world. I'm going to share with you that I think there's four reasons for it. There may be more, and you may challenge some of these reasons. It is my opinion, my conclusion, that the primary reason that we have witnessed such an increase in horrific acts is a direct consequence of the indoctrination of socialist secular humanism and of political correctness and of no accountability, no sense of right and wrong, where lies are promoted as if they were true and the truth cannot be told. People can no longer execute sound judgment. And precluded from executing sound judgment, they do stupid things like this moron in Texas, like the two cops in New Orleans and Minnesota. I think it is the single greatest factor in the dumbing down of our society to the point that there is no sense of accountability, no sense of responsibility, no sense of right and wrong, no ability to make a rational, moral, or appropriate decision.
Nothing that happens to me is my fault.
That is
somebody it. Always does something to me.
Correct. You know, there was a book that came out just recently by a woman who served in the Bush administration that was a huge proponent of No Child Left Behind, which is an unmitigated disaster, and national testing standards, which are also unmitigated disasters. Really, it took what was already a failing academic system and made it far worse. And she has come to the conclusion, she wrote a new book, she says, you know, that it's unfair to evaluate teachers on this basis of national standards and testing because there's the common denominator in poor testing or good testing is poverty. Poverty or affluence. Affluent students do well. Poor students do poorly. And I read that and said, the person who wrote this article is incapable of thinking. Has nothing to do with poverty. Has nothing to do with wealth. That test does not know if that student is dressed in nice clothes or is tattered. It does not know if that person came from a lavish home or from the street corner. It does not know. It does not know if it has a credit card and folding money in the wallet or a few jangling coins in the pocket. It does not know those things. But what I can tell you is that we have created a culture in this country, and it's a direct product of the great society of Lyndon Johnson. And I'm going to say that it is the second aspect in this problem, where we have a dependency culture that thinks that they are entitled. It's not my responsibility. You owe me. And it became an economic incentive to have children. And in the African-American community in particular, over 85% of children are born outside of a nuclear family with a married husband and wife. And there's no example of getting up, getting dressed, going to work, showing up on time, doing a job, being responsible. What there is an example of is being lazy, of opting out, of doing nothing, of shirking responsibility, of thinking it's other people's responsibility. And that has destroyed the character of generations of people. And that's the reason why those who are impoverished are often, now it's not 100% of the case. There are some people who go through some rough times and they're impoverished for no fault of their own, and they are willing to work and have worked and will work again. But in the case of many, it's generational. And it's been promoted by a society that rewards failure and punishes success. And it's created this climate. So there is no example. There is no nuclear family of fathers and mothers setting the right example and making sacrifices on behalf of their children. I'm going to give you a third reason. Alcoholism is on the rise, but drug use, both prescription and illegal, is out of control. America never should have waged war on drugs. Made a situation vastly worse. And today, the opiate use, both for prescription and now through illicit drugs, is it's a prairie fire. I mean, we're dealing with something that is growing exponentially. We have a very significant percentage of the population that is operating impaired. They're inebriated. They're intoxicated. They're drugged. What little capacity they may have once had to execute good judgment, they can no longer do it. They're out of their minds. Now, there's another reason. We have created an artificial world, whether in our reality TV and or it's our video games or the movies. We've created an artificial world. You know, and particularly in the video games, you know, you can have a first-person shooter and you can go kill people and you can get killed, but you just hit the reset button. You start all over again. It's kind of like flying a drone. You lose a sensitivity to the consequence of your actions and of the value of life under those circumstances. I think those are the factors. I think those are the things that we should be discussing. Now, there's one other thing I want to say, and then I'd love to have your guys' comments. If a black person is killed violently, what is the likelihood that they were killed by another black person?
About 80%.
You're close. It's 90.
Okay.
So if black lives matter, 90% of the time that a black person is killed violently in a crime in America, they're killed by another black person. The animosity, the rage, ought not be at whites, as Obama and others are trying to make it out to be. 90% of the time, according to the Department of Justice, A black person is killed in America, they're killed by another black person. If a white person is killed in America, are they typically killed by another white person or by a black person?
There again, it's probably more racial.
Nope.
Black.
Nope. 70%. 70% of whites that are murdered by fellow whites.
Hmm.
Now, a small amount, relatively small amount. So most crime is has nothing to do with race. You know, 70% of white murders are perpetrated by whites. And 90% of black murders are perpetrated by blacks. There's no racism there. None. So it's only a potential of 30% of Caucasian murders and 10% of black murders that are racial. And of those murders, which would be about 33% of murders in the country, what percentage of those murders is as the president and everyone that seems to be marching on behalf of the black victims would suggest is perpetrated by racist whites against blacks versus racist blacks against whites? If a white and if a black and a white person are engaged in a violent act, what percentage of the time is the white individual the perpetrator, and what percentage of the time is the black person the perpetrator? Now, I'm not. I'm just sharing with you facts. These are all from Department of Justice. You can look them up yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's no opinion here. There's no bias here. These are just the facts. What percentage of black on white crime or white on black crime is perpetrated by the black versus the white individual?
Probably much greater by the black perpetrated by the black community.
8 times out of 10.
Uh-huh.
8 times out of 10. I read an article today that said that that they were protesting because of unfair treatment and biased treatment by the Department of Justice. Over the last 20 years, the Department of Justice has looked at the average number of black suspects that have been prosecuted and convicted versus white. Because if race mattered, and you look at the same crimes, and you looked at the percentage of whites versus black that were convicted of those crimes, you could say there was a bias in conviction rates. The white is 10% more likely to be convicted than the black. Now, 10% really isn't significant. But rather than the black individual being more likely to suffer an injustice and to be convicted than the white, it's the other way around. Now, it is also true that of those convicted, the black individual typically receives a 10% longer sentence. Now, I'm going to tell you that since those things are offsetting, it means that there is no racial prejudice in the justice system, and 10% either way would be insignificant overall to make a case, regardless if they were. But I would much prefer to be on the side of 10% fewer convictions than I would be bothered by a 10% longer sentence. So a lot of things to think about there, none of which are part of the national discourse. What's causing it? What can we do to stop it? What are the actual realities that we're dealing with here? And yet there's no discussion on any of that.
No. When I grew up, morals and manners were taught by everybody. You know, I mean, it's whether you went to church or not is irrelevant. Your parents taught you that. You were confronted with by your football coaches.
Right.
This is the right thing to do. This is the wrong thing to do.
Correct.
Came up in society as yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am, which is polite to me.
Right.
So it didn't, and it was kind of ingrained. That was our culture.
Yeah, a sense of right and wrong.
What your race was, everybody was treated pretty much the same way. Everybody got a whooping if they needed it or whatever, and I'm not encouraging everybody to whoop somebody.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that was the nature of the beast.
And my exposure has been that a very small minority of Caucasians are racist. Now, I've employed a lot of people. I've gotten to know a lot of people. And, you know, I've done radio and everything. I have pretty good contact with a lot of people. I've traveled in over 150 countries around the world. And there's not a lot of people that have, you know, engaged with as many people as I have. I would say that very small, you know, I've met people that are racist. I'm always adverse to them. I think that anybody that makes a decision about somebody based upon their skin color
right.
is making a horrendous choice.
Not a good reason.
That's not a good reason. Now, my experience is that a minority of Caucasians are racist. I do not think that is the case in the African-American community. And I know it for a fact it's not the case in the Arab community.
Well, no. Yeah.
Most Arabs are extraordinarily racist.
Mm-hmm.
Most African-Americans are extraordinarily racist. This man that says, I want to kill white people, is his sentiments, his racism, is not that uncommon in that community. We have a problem. We have a serious, serious problem. And this problem has nothing to do with guns. Oh, it does in one respect, but the wrong way. We have way, way, way too many federal, state, and local authorities who are armed. And we have way too great an integration between our national surveillance and spy agencies, our military, our federal agents, and our state and local police. Too much integration. They act too similarly. Too many of them come out of the same military mindset. They're way overly armed. And they're way too prone to violence. And America has become an extraordinarily militaristic state.
There haven't been too many armies in history that are armed as well as our police force.
No.
This is a military. It's not a police force. These guys have everything.
They do. And yet what we're going to hear is that the problem in Dallas is that a citizen, although they'll not speak of the fact that he was in the U.S. Army Reserve.
Mm-hmm. Somebody trained him.
Had a military type weapon, and he didn't. An AR-15 is not a military type weapon. It's not a fully automatic weapon. The military have fully automatic weapons, and you have things a lot more powerful and a lot more capable than an AR-15. And long rifles are a substantial minority of the weapons used in mass killings. But they'll blame that. They'll blame the military-style weapon. They'll cry and say that, you know, America's gun laws. But, you know, the reason, there's really two reasons that Jefferson wanted even more than he got in the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is worded in a certain way to convey a very important message. And it says that it's military-type weapons that must be held and kept, owned by the citizenry if there's any hope for them to be free. Because if only the military and the police have guns, you don't have any freedom. The bottom line. The second issue with Jefferson is that there's only one thing Jefferson opposed more than an established military. And that was the central bank.
Yeah.
But it was his opinion, and I think he was correct in this, and this is what he wrote, that the central bank does not happen without an established military. that the establishing of a military and the deployment of that military is what necessitates a central bank to fund its endeavors. It's essentially what Yahweh said. He said, you know, that you want a human to govern you. If you want a human to govern you, if you want a government, you need to understand the first thing that person is going to do is going to take your sons to serve in their military, and then they're going to take your money to equip them, to buy weapons for them, and then number three, they're going to use them. They're going to deploy them, which is going to require them to take even more money from you. It's exactly what Yahweh said would happen if we chose human government. It's exactly what we're witnessing. And so Jefferson wanted the population to be armed, because if the population is armed, there is no chance whatsoever under any circumstances that any foreign foe can invade and occupy the country. Your freedom is determined by your citizenry, not by a military. You do not need a military to protect your borders and to keep your country free of occupation if your citizenry is armed. And so an armed citizenry was a guarantee that you would not have to have an established military. That's why the Second Amendment is written the way it is. Have you heard anybody present?
Never.
That argument?
No.
But it's irrefutable. And there is no question that Jefferson made both quotes. And there's no question that his discussions with Madison were in this regard. Oh. And that his only opposition to the U.S. Constitution is it did not preclude an established military. He thought it did preclude a central bank because it limited the U.S. government, to only coinage.
The Second Amendment is also the only amendment that they ever question how he wrote it. Like, there's no other amendment that they're like, well, he probably didn't mean it that way. He meant to write it this way.
Right.
Every other amendment is good. It's this one that they're like, well, he wrote it wrong.
He wrote it wrong.
They never
cite how it's written. You never heard any person who wishes to restrict guns ever recite the amendment as it's written, where it specifically says that a trained and equipped militia is essential to a people's freedom. Therefore, there can be no infringement on the people's right to keep and bear arms. I mean, that's how it's written.
Also, you were talking about what keeps us, you know, helps our freedom. Obviously, like you said, it's the guns. But we also have these two things. There's these two huge bodies of water. I think they're the largest bodies of water in the known galaxy that are on both our coasts.
Of course, the Canadians and the Mexicans have a menacing, invasive military that we
history.
Need.
Terrible history of invasion.
And, of course, and I think I'm sure there's at least 15 aircraft carriers that are operated by the Bahamians.
Which we've talked on Chattering Myth that...
Oh, well, maybe the Hawaiians have canoes. Oh, no, we annexed Hawaii without their consent. So... maybe we should. Maybe the world should be against the United States, like it's against Russia for Crimea, based upon Hawaii. Nah, let's not go there. So here we are. We are not only becoming, in fact, we probably are vastly worse than the violent and deadly perpetrators that Yahweh sought to wipe out 5,000 years ago during the flood. We don't have a clue as to how we got here or what we can do to resolve the problem. We don't even know what the problem is.
Well, if you can't think, you're never going to get there.
No. I read something a couple days ago that has, maybe 3 days ago, that is completely and totally devoured my time. And it's an example of when you read something, when you see something, you just read over it, or do you think, what does that really mean?